Before we get into the episode, I'm excited to announce that we have our first sponsor for the Wizards podcast. Assault Wrestling Alliance is a local promotion company in Southern Maryland that provides families and kids sports entertainment at affordable prices. Here's a quick word from our sponsor before we get into the episode.
Assault Wrestling Alliance is back in Waldorf with temperature rising. See all your favorite AWA stars in hard-hitting non-stop Assault Wrestling Alliance action. And appearing live, former WWE and ECW star, The Sandman. Tickets are on sale now, so grab yours and don't miss the action. Saturday, August 3rd.
What is up, and welcome back to another edition of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode is going to be a mailbag episode. It's going to be pretty much a recorded Q&A. I sent out a tweet 2 days ago asking all you guys to give me some questions about free agency, about draft picks, about the future, about what they might do with the deadline, all Wizards-centric, and I received quite a bit of reply. So if you did reply, I appreciate it. I'm going to try to get to every single question that was posed. But yeah, just you know, not a lot going on with the Wizards. Free agency is pretty much over. Obviously the draft happened a month ago. Summer league's done. It's pretty much dead until mid-August, I guess, that the schedule will release, and that'll be cool for about a day, seeing when the Wizards play certain games, seeing obviously that the Wizards will have yet again no national TV games, which I don't blame anyone for. And then after that, training camp in late September, preseason in mid-October, and then you start the season. So pretty dead. August and late July is usually the deadest part. So I thought a Q&A or like a mailbag would be pretty cool, just to kind of answer some of your the viewers and listeners, you know, post questions. So without further ado, just want to jump right into it. This is from at Kuppa Java. This is all on Twitter. They asked three questions, so I appreciate you for asking, you know, some questions. The first one is, are there any free agents we should have gone after? I guess this means free agents that they didn't sign. No. I mean, if you listen to my free agency special before free agency, I didn't think they'd sign any outside free agents, but they did. They signed Valanciunas. It was technically a trade, a sign and trade, but they basically signed him, and Sadiq Bey as well. So those were the outside free agents, and they retained one of their own, Anthony Gill, let Tyus Jones walk. So a quiet type of free agency, but I didn't think they should have gone after anyone. The Wizards are kind of sellers instead of buyers. They're not looking to take, you know, give big money to anybody right now. So I don't mind that they didn't go after anybody else. Second question, why sign Gill? If there's a good reason, why not make him a coach rather than burn a player spot? Why sign Gill? I got this a lot. I posted that I was very happy with it, and everyone was like, why? He averages 3.8 points per game. Look, if you're talking stats when you're talking Anthony Gill, you got it all wrong. This is a true veteran, a guy that's going to be first in the gym, last to leave. Really good work ethic, going to give his best. And, you know, a lot of the things that he does will go unnoticed. It won't be on the stat sheet. It's coming, you know, first off the bench to give encouragement to his teammates. Again, setting a good example of being the first one in the gym and last one to leave, even when he's not getting good playing time. And then when he does get in the game, he's a solid player. He's always ready when his name's called. Very well-liked, respected in the organization. And I'll raise you a counterpoint. For a guy that only averages 3.8 points, not a lot of rebounds, isn't that great of a player, he is under contract for the next 2 years. That would be 6 years on the Wizards for a guy that you don't think is that good because of his stats. So clearly he's doing something else other than the counting stats. He's clearly doing something else very well. And that something else is being a true professional, being a great teammate, being a mentor to these guys. And so, yeah, I think he's worth a roster spot. Would you rather give that spot to Eugene Omorui, who is 27 and really isn't going to amount to much in the league? Would you rather give it to Patrick Bowen Jr., who has struggled in every chance he's gotten and doesn't really look like he deserves an NBA spot? No, I think we have enough spots on this team given to people who have proven themselves and are also guys that haven't proven themselves yet, but very likely will in terms of their potential. So I think it's okay to reserve 14 spots for them and then one spot for a great vet like Anthony Gill. And the final question posed here is, what things should the Wizards do in order to in order for this upcoming season to be considered a success? And this was my favorite question of this group. The things that they should do, number one, the record is a non-factor. Honestly, it's better the worse that they are, considering how great this draft class is, because if you're the worst team, you can't fall anywhere outside. I think it's the top five. So, like, there's 5 to 6 prospects in this class that I think are very good. 5 prospects that would likely have gone number one this past year in a very weak draft that'll be top 5, top 6 next year. Obviously, Cooper Flagg is the top guy, and you want to tank for him. But there's a lot of really good players in the top. So if you're the worst team, that's actually better for you. To be considered a success, I want to see Bilal Coulibaly develop. I want to see Alex Saar do something offensively. The rim protection, I think, will be there. So you want to see player development from some of your recent draft picks. I'd like to see them actually capitalize on the value they have in terms of the vets on this roster. You know, trade guys like maybe Kyle Kuzma or Valanciunas at the deadline. Certainly a guy like Malcolm Brogdon. When you look at Tyus Jones, and I'll talk about this later because so many questions were brought up about Tyus. You want to capitalize on veterans' value when you can, and I also want to see player development from the younger guys. So those are the two things that I think would constitute a successful year, in my opinion. Moving on to the next question. This is from JCodo3. I hope I said that right. He said, Brogdon doesn't seem to be brought up much when talking about the upcoming season. Do you think he will be a starter or a bench player? Additionally, do you think the front office will be more privy to trading him by the trade deadline, given their failure to gamble with their failed gamble with Tyus Jones? This is a great question. I appreciate you posing this. The first part, do I think he'll start or come off the bench? If you listen to, I think it was my last pod, I predicted the starting five, and I do have Brogdon starting at shooting guard. A lot of people kind of pushed back on this, said that they would prefer Corey. They think he'd fit better. I think Brogdon's a better defender than Corey. He shot better from three last year. He shot 41.3% compared to Corey, who I think shot 36% in a down year shooting for Corey. So they offer various things. I mean, Corey's a better cutter, more size, I guess. I think Brogdon's the better player right now. I think he adds more in terms of defensive versatility to the starting group. So I think he'll start. And they're also trying to showcase him so they can hopefully trade him. And the second part, do I think the front office will be more privy to trading him, basically like more open to trading him due to how they botched the situation with Tyus? I do. But that's the thing. Like, front offices aren't going to be perfect. And this front office has been damn near perfect apart from, I'd say, that move with Tyus Jones failing to trade him. So I think, you know, they're going to learn from it. And they overvalued him. Point blank, they overvalued Tyus Jones. They try to call the bluff of other teams saying, we won't give you a first. And the other teams are basically like, okay, we're not going to give you a first. So we're not going to give you anything if you don't want to take our 4 second round picks. So yes, I do think they're going to be more open to moving Brogdon, but I'm not opposed to them keeping him until the deadline and keeping him for a bit, because he's going to help Jordan Poole. He's going to help Jared Butler and Bob Carrington. You know, this guy's been in the league for a while now. And he's got a lot of experience, playoff experience. And he's going to help these guys move along in their development and hopefully be traded in February. So I do think that they will be more privy to trading Malcolm Brogdon. This question is from my guy, Michael B at MTBag77. My guy, Michael, appreciate you offering this. Michael, talk to me. I talked to him the other day. He's a big fan of the pod, so I appreciate you for listening and sending this question. And Michael, Michael said, what kind of year does the team have to consider keeping Kuzma? Or is that even going to be an option no matter how good they play? That's the first question. In terms of the year, I don't know if the record is going to be any type of indicator, because I think the Wizards are going to be pretty bad. And look, if the Wizards are like somehow like a decent play-in team by the deadline, they're going to sell, obviously. I don't think it'll mean anything versus if they're the worst team. So I don't know if a record has any bearing on what they decide to do with Kyle. If anything, I think how Kyle plays could decide what they decide to do with Kyle. Because if Kyle Kuzma is lighting it up and he is clearly a guy that contending teams would like, you know, he's efficient And that's the big thing. He's efficient in his shots. He's taking quality shots, and all, doing all that when the whole defense is catered towards him. It's like, well, imagine what he can do on a team like the Lakers as a third or fourth option. Okay, then the Lakers will be like, all right, well, we'll move a first or multiple firsts to try to bring him on as a 3-and-D wing that can help our team. And that's the other thing, defense. Kyle Kuzma has become more of a scorer and less of a defender in his time in DC as he's become the number one option. So I think the defense is also something to keep an eye on in terms of his value. Again, I don't think record is much bearing on Kuz in terms of how if he gets moved. I think his play will. And the second part is, if they trade him, when do you think that will be, and what kind of return do you think they can get? If they decide to move Kuz, I think it would be either at the deadline this year or during the 2025 offseason. I say the deadline this year because I think you can get the most return from him at the deadline when desperate teams call. I mean, I've always looked at a team like Sacramento, who decided not to do anything at last year's deadline, didn't do much this offseason apart from re-signing Monk and bringing in DeRozan. They still have cap space. They still have picks. They can decide to move basically all in and try to get Kuz to make a run. There's gonna be contending teams that are underperforming at the deadline, and they're like, holy, like, we have to do something. We can't just sit here. We have to make a move. Kyle Kuzma is one of the better players that you can kind of plug and play in any situation. He's gonna, help your team. So I think you could get the most desperate trade packages and possibly the best trade packages at the deadline. But again, if they decide to keep him and they don't get what they want, the 2025 offseason is ideal salary-wise because Kuz is making 23.5 mil this year. He's making under 20 mil for the next 2 years. So 2025, 26, 2026, 27, he's making, I think, 19 mil and then 17 mil, which is absolute steals, bargain contracts. So his play coupled with a sub 20 million salary is a steal for any team. And I think in the offseason next year, that would probably be where his trade value is the highest when there's only 2 years left and his contract is one of the best in the league. So hopefully that answers your question, Michael. I appreciate you sending that in. Moving along here. Next question is from at Ahoy Roy Boy. He said, other than necessary cuts, what other moves do you anticipate, if any, being made before the season begins? Great question. In terms of like free agent signings, we talked about this at the top of the show. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think there will be any free agent decisions made, but obviously you'll see there's a pretty stacked roster, obviously, as you mentioned, with cuts. 17 guys pretty much vying for 15 spots. So I don't think signing any free agents makes sense. I don't think any trades are going to be made. I think you got your 17 guys that are battling for the 15 spots. In terms of less major moves, Brian Keefe is probably going to make a couple more coaching hires. He's going to round out his staff. That's player development. That's on the bench staff. So it's a moving process in terms of him getting his guys. So I think maybe you'll see some coaching hires announced. There's going to be some invites. The Wizards will invite some like fringe NBA, G League guys, maybe some overseas guys. Because remember, training camp rosters can be up to 20. You can have 20, I think 21 actually. 21 players can attend your training camp in the NBA. And I think right now the Wizards have, I'd say, 17 guys that are vying for like 15 NBA spots. And then you consider your two-way guys, Champagne, Vucevic, and I guess Taylor Funk. So that's like 20. So maybe you'll see one or two other guys get invited to camp. You could also always see people get waived before camp. So moving parts like that. And then the last thing is a Corey Kispert extension is very possible. I would be inclined to think that it would be pretty similar to Denny, like mid-October, right before the season. And I don't know what the value is, maybe like a 4-year, $44 million deal. Like a 3-year, $33 million deal. I think like 10 to 11 mil per year works. And if Corey wants to bet on himself, then he won't do it. But I think Corey Kispert's a good, valued part of this team's future. And I think an extension could get done. So not a lot of exciting things, but those are the things that I'm kind of thinking about as we move into this kind of dead part of the offseason. There's a couple of things that I would watch for before the regular season kicks off. Next question is from Jared, my guy Jared at Freethinking1. Huge Wizards fan. Always appreciate hearing Jared's insight. Regular on the Twitter spaces as well, so I appreciate you sending that in, Jared. He asked three really good questions. The first one, how do you think Kispert and his role plays into this season and the future with the Wizards? And it's great because we just literally talked about him. In terms of his role, I think he's going to be a sixth man, scorer off the bench, a good shooter for that second unit. Some people think he should start. I don't mind if he does. Obviously, I love seeing him start, but I think Brogdon starting makes more sense considering he's more likely to be moved. He's a bigger trade piece. And I think they're going to try to flash what he can do before they look to flash, I guess, what Corey can do. So that's what I think his role is going to be, at least for the time being. In terms of the future with the Wizards, it's tough to say. I mean, we saw reports right before the draft that he could be moved and that teams were calling about Corey Kispert and the Wizards were willingly listening. And they decided, I guess, not to move him. So, again, like I've mentioned for a while now, Bilal Coulibaly and the Wizards' recent draft picks are the only untouchables. For anybody else, as you saw with the Denny trade, fair game. So I never want to come out here and say they will never trade Corey Kispert because it's very possible. They didn't draft him. They didn't sign him. He was, you know, a piece that was here when they took over. But he's proved himself as a very good piece and one that I think they should at least consider taking into the future of this rebuild. Jared's second question is, what do you want to see from Sar by the end of this season? I'm glad you mentioned this because I've been thinking about this for a bit now. I'd like to see Alex Sar get smarter with the ball. I think, as you saw in Summer League, they might use him as like a hub for their offense where he's setting screens and doing all the rolling and stuff the traditional bigs do, but he's catching it at the top of the key, and he's, you know, the people are cutting. He has to make decisions on dribble handoffs, on backdoor passes. You see the Spurs do this a lot with Wemby. Obviously, the Nuggets are the best at it when they just give the ball to Jokic and say, make the right play. And I'm not saying Sar needs that much responsibility, but I'd like him to make the right reads. I feel like he forced it a lot in Summer League. Made some good passes, though. So he's a smart player. I'd like to see him get the better in terms of making reads, if that makes sense. Developing basic offensive moves. And I don't need him to be Kareem in the post, but or Hakeem in the post. But finish your layups. When you get the ball in the paint, show me that you can get it into the basket. Like, don't get bullied. You know, don't just pass it right back out and be scared. I want to see something like that. Setting good screens, you know, being a menace offensively on the boards. Those are all basic things that I'd like to see. I don't need him to be posterizing people. I don't need him to be hitting fadeaways or, you know, hook shots. Just do the simple things very well, and I will be completely content. And then the last thing, rim protecting, you know, I want them to be noticeable. I don't want it to just be like, well, we know he can do it on occasion. I want him to be a good rim protector. And it doesn't have to be Gobert, at like right now or Wemby or anything like that, but he has to be present. He has to be able to be a noticeable force on, you know, in the, on defense in the paint. So that's kind of what I'm looking for Alex Sar. And then Jared's final question is, do you think the Wizards should consider starting Bob Carrington at point guard on day one? No, and here's why. Jordan Poole proved last year in the 30 games at the end of the year that he started at point guard, that he is a point guard. That's clearly the position he's best suited to play. And I think he deserves a fair shot to start there and showcase why he deserves that job. Now, it's a different story if Jordan Poole struggles for the first 20 to 30 games, looks like he did in the beginning of last season, turning the ball over, taking poor shots, not playing good defense. And then you can be like, well, you had your shot, and now it's time to see if Bub can do it and maybe move him back off ball. But I don't think that'll be the case. I think Jordan Poole is a great player, and I think he's going to be their starting point guard. So, and I also think it works for Bub because Bob has a ways to go in terms of his reads. There were times where he had high turnover games in Summer League, and sometimes where he didn't turn the ball over at all. So he's a very smart player, but the Summer League and college level is so much different. Those reads are so much different from professional reads and NBA reads. And he's still got to learn the offense too. So all of these things coming in, he's just 19 years old. I think it be better to gradually ease him into things instead of just throwing him into the fire. And I think the Wizards will do this. You saw how cautious they were with Bilal. You know, didn't start him early on. Kind of were reserved in his minutes, and then kind of let him go before he broke his wrist. So they're going to be, I think, very smart with it, strategic, and gradually ease Bob into things. And again, who I think deserves to start at point guard. So all of that considered, I think that should answer your question as to why I don't think Bob should start at point guard over day one. And I think Jordan Poole should. So again, I appreciate you reaching out with those questions, Jared. Always nice to hear from you. Moving on, another regular in the spaces, my guy Sean, sending in a question. He asked, with the front office missing on the trade of Kristaps Porzingis and Tyus Jones, do you think it's time to rethink the Kyle Kuzma trade and get what the Wizards can get for Kuz, even if it's only for one first-round pick? And what Sean's referencing with the only one first-round pick here is, it's been widely reported that the Wizards are holding out for at least two first-round picks for Kyle Kuzma. It's been reported that they've been offered one first-round pick and just completely denied those trades, didn't want to listen. It was also reported by multiple sources. One said that the Wizards got one first for Kuz from Dallas and declined it. Others said that the Wizards got multiple firsts for Kuz and declined it because Kuz said he didn't want to go there. You know, there's a lot, but it's clear that the Wizards want multiple first-round picks for Kyle Kuzma, and they haven't pulled the trigger. So, you know, Sean's question is a good one because it's like, well, what is it going to take to rethink that decision? The Wizards held out with Tyus Jones. They thought they can get a first. They didn't. And at that point, they didn't want to pivot to multiple seconds. They just kept him. And as you saw, he signed with the Suns. The Wizards get nothing in return. The KP trade now looks worse. So do I think that they will make that same mistake? No. But again, I think they're going to be very bullish. They're going to be very stubborn on the Kuzma trade front, especially considering Kuz has made it pretty clear he wants to stay here. And I don't know if that's for the next 5 years, but for the time being, I think he does. And look, I've been in the trade Kyle Kuzma camp for a minute now. And again, that's not to say that I think the Wizards need to trade him. I think the Wizards should at least consider it. I think it should be one of the things on the top of their mind because, look, I'm not Will Dawkins. I'm not Michael Winger. I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know what their long-term plan is. But I do know that if the intention is to ultimately move Kyle Kuzma at some point, whether it's now or at the trade deadline or in the 2025 offseason, I'm in the camp that you should move him now rather than keep holding out, hoping that your luck will change and his value will change, because I don't think it will. I think Kyle Kuzma's value is his value, and I think that they should capitalize on it as soon as possible, not only because it would open shots, but it would open playing time for younger guys. Like Bilal Coulibaly obviously would be starting, but so would Corey Kispert. Low-key, instead of Corey, maybe Alex Saar is starting at that power forward spot. So it opens up so much for the younger guys in terms of more playing time for their development, more shots to go around. He's taking like 20 a game, so that's 20 shots to divvy up. Bigger roles for certain guys that I think have earned them. And I think Kyle Kuzma, like I mentioned, his value is at the peak right now. I don't know if he can really do much. I mean, people know that he can score, he can shoot, and that he can defend when he wants, but doesn't really look to be a willing defender anymore. What is he really going to do? If he averages like 25 a game, okay, but I guarantee you it's going to be on poor shooting splits. It'll be on 20-plus shots per game, and it'll be inefficient. And then if you're a contending team, you're like, well, that's exactly what we thought Kyle Kuzma was. So I don't think his value is going to be moved that much based on his play this year. If anything, it can only go down. So again, I think that they should rethink it. I think that they should be way more open to getting just one first and maybe salary filler young talent back, especially if that first is from a fringe playoff team looking to buy when they shouldn't, like a Sacramento. And then that pick could be mid first round, early 20s at the worst, and you get another guy like Bob Carrington or Keyshawn George or one of those guys in a really loaded draft this year, you know, to better your team for the future. So great question by Sean. I do think that they should rethink it for sure. Moving forward to the next question from Wizards fan at Wizards fan two ways. He asked, or she asked, in successful rebuilds, OKC, Minnesota, etc., we really only see one or two young guys become long-term franchise players. What do you think the plan is for mid-tier players in this rebuild? Do you see Corey Kispert, Tristan Vucevic, Marvin Bagley, Jordan Poole being traded, walking, or staying in the next 3 to 4 years? This is a fantastic question. It's very tricky to answer this right now because this could go a lot of ways. But it is a good point because, you know, teams that are rebuilding, you need the guys to build around. Like you mentioned, OKC, they have Shea via trade, but they also have Jalen Williams and Chet, who they drafted. They had Josh Giddey, who they traded, another one of their top picks, for Alex Caruso, a 3-and-D wing. So you can do a lot with these guys. I mean, Minnesota, they have two number one picks, Cat and Anthony Edwards, but you forget they also traded to basically get the number one pick and take Andrew Wiggins. So that's three number ones. Two of them are currently the reason that they were really good last year, and the other one was moved in a trade a couple years ago. So, like, the draft picks don't always work out. A couple of them usually get traded or don't pan out the way you think, but you need those guys to pan out. You need them to be stars. And I think looking at the Wizards, I don't know, and a lot of people don't know, if they have those stars yet, and they're hoping that this draft class upcoming can be where they get their guy. And now, like you mentioned, in terms of mid-tier players, they don't always work out, and usually certain guys don't last the entirety of the rebuild. Most of them, if you weren't drafted by this team, don't last. So look, for Corey Kispert, it's been reported he's on the not on the trade block, but he's in trade rumors. He could easily be moved. I don't think he will be. I think they'll actually extend him, like I mentioned before. I think they'll extend Corey and keep him through this year, and then who knows if he's in a situation next year where you can get a first round pick for him. I don't know. You got to at least think about it. And I think a lot of people would say take it. So I think Corey stays for the time being. Tristan Vucevic, again, for the time being, he's only in his second year. He's only 21 years old, I believe. But for summer league, second round pick on a very cheap deal. And it's a two-way contract as well. So I don't think they're going to look to trade him by any means, but if he doesn't start to show something, they're not necessarily inclined to give him NBA minutes. So again, I think those are two guys that'll be here for a couple years, but you don't think of them as roster locks by any means. Absolutely no on Marvin Bagley. I think he's only 25, but he kind of is what he is. So, you know, I don't think he fits the timeline. And then Jordan Poole, it's weird because he's 25, I think, as well. But he's an NBA champion already. He has proven himself in this league, and he's also the highest paid player on this team. Do I think Jordan Poole will be the point guard when the Wizards like ultimately start to contend? I don't. I would love that. I'm rooting for him. I hope he is the point guard, but time-wise, salary-wise, I don't know. I don't know if it is. And again, with Bob Carrington emerging, it's very possible that Bob is the point guard of the future and Jordan Poole ends up walking or ends up being traded at the deadline. So not this deadline. Jordan Poole will be here for a bit, especially with that contract being as big as it is. It's hard to move. So again, I don't see any rash decisions being made on any of these guys apart from Marvin Bagley. But yeah, hopefully that answers your question. And I will say to end it, like I mentioned earlier, Bilal Coulibaly was the only untouchable for a while. You can throw Sar, Bub, and George in there as well. But look, anybody else is fair game. You saw that with Denny. So I could sit here and tell you Corey Kispert, I don't think will be traded, and we can record the next pod in a week, and he's already on another team. So obviously a lot could happen, but that's kind of my thoughts there. Great question. This next one is from at Tang Pudi on Twitter. They asked, which active players do you think the Wizards should go after that aligns with their future roster? And my answer to this is the same as my answer to the question beforehand about other free agents they should sign, and nobody. Like, free agency is pretty much closed. It's kind of done now. The trade market is unlikely. You know, the Wizards aren't really going to be at that phase of sending out picks for talent. They're sending out talent for picks. So I don't think anything via the trade market. I don't think anything via free agency. I think they're done. And they're gonna they have the guys for their future roster on their roster, and they're gonna develop them as much as they can, and look to do it that way. So I don't think there's many people I'm looking to go after right now. I mean, maybe when if you make certain trades, like let's say Kyle Kuzma gets moved to the Lakers, Max Christie is a guy that would make sense salary wise, and I like Max Lewis is another guy that I also am a fan of. Like, there's definitely younger players to be had with decent upside if you decide to move veterans. So if you phrase the question like that, it makes sense. But in terms of other guys like that, I'm not really looking at that right now. So appreciate your question. Next question is from at Ari J. He asked, win loss prediction. Look, it's win loss prediction's tough because like I and right hand up, I'll completely, take accountability here. I thought the Wizards win total at like 24 and a half last year was disrespectful. I looked and I valued their roster way too much, and they ended up winning 15 games. I'm not going to make that mistake again this year. If anything, I'm going to predict less wins than I actually think they will get. I think their over under is 23 and a half or 22 and a half wins on DraftKings right now. I'm going to take the under. I would go 21 and 61, a slightly better record than last year, just because I think their roster right now is better. You added Valanciunas, you added Brogdon. Jordan Poole is now back at his, regular position. Kyle Kuzma's playing the four. Another year of developing Bilal. Corey Kispert's gotten better, and you have Keyshawn and Bob and Sarr added to that fold as well. But you also have to factor in you lost Denny Avdia. You traded him, one of your best players, your best defender, and you also traded Daniel Gafford, your best interior defender, at the deadline last year, and you saw the impact that he had because the Wizards couldn't rebound to save their life or rim protect to save their life for the second half of last year. I think they're a better, more well-rounded team, but you can't overlook some of the talent, especially defensively, that they did lose. So I am at 21 and 61. 21 wins would be a 6-win improvement. I also factor in, I think the coach is 10 times better. I really didn't like Wes Unseld Jr.'s philosophies, his coaching style, his lack of timeout calling, his lack of preparation, it seemed, his lack of adjustments. I could go on and on, but I think that a lot of things are a little bit better this year. Not a lot better, but a little bit better. And I think you'll see pre-trade deadline, they'll be a solid team. Like, not obviously not great, but like they're not gonna. I don't think they'll be a team where like they're losing 10 games in a row and all that. I think they'll be decently competitive, hopefully. But once the trade deadline happens and you see some of these veterans get moved, I think it's just like last year, it's gonna be really tough to watch. So, I mean, last year they didn't win a game in February, I think they lost 14 or 15 games in February. So, you could very well see a repeat next year, but I think they're going to be slightly better. 21 wins, 61 losses. Hopefully, that's the worst record in the league. Then you move on to this is our final question of the mailbag. It's from at Mans99 Liam, my guy from Twitter. He asks, do you think that the Wizards have regressed in their advancement of the rebuild, given that we have now lost Denny for Bub, but drafted Sarr, which could have been Reed Sheppard at pick two? And potentially a big man at 26 without losing Denny. So he's basically saying, do you think the Wizards took a step back in their improvements by trading a young 23-year-old, I think, Denny Avdia, 22-year-old Denny Avdia for Bob, and then drafting Sarr over Reed Sheppard? Should they have just taken Sheppard at two, kept Denny, and then taken a big man at 26? I get that, and look, hindsight's 20/20. I've been saying this since Alex Sarr struggled in Summer League. The Alex Sarr pick was the right pick. I will defend that forever. Alex Sarr, his intangibles, his potential, his defense, it's just so all of that is better than Reed Sheppard. Right now, Reed Sheppard might be a better player, but in terms of potential, I think Alex Sarr is more in a position of need. I think he's the right pick. And I think if he turns out to be a bust, it's more so on the Wizards player development staff than on the Wizards front office. So again, hindsight's 2020. I if I if I had to If you asked the Wizards front office, if you did a draft right now, if you drafted again, who would you take? They would take Alex Saar first overall every day of the week. It'll definitely take him at number two if he falls over Reed Sheppard. And if you ask a lot of Wizards fans as well, I think the majority would also say, I'm still taking Alex Saar. You know, I'm unmoved by Reed Sheppard's summer league. I knew Reed Sheppard was a great player. I think I had Reed Sheppard number two on my board behind Alex Saar. But again, we've seen a lot. Summer league doesn't tell you the whole story. So again, I'm not panicking. And again, if I had to redraft, I'd take Saar. In terms of the Denny trade, again, at the time I was a very publicly not a fan of moving Denny, but very publicly a big fan of Bob Carrington. Even the pre-draft process, I had him, I think, ninth on my board, and the Wizards got him at 14. So like I'm very happy that we got Bob. I'm very happy that the Wizards traded up to get Keyshawn. But I'm not happy that they traded Denny. So that's I don't really that trade is kind of you'll have to see. And look, I hope the Wizards look dumb for trading Denny because I'm a huge fan. I'm still gonna be a fan of Denny on Portland. I hope he does unbelievable. But I also hope, obviously, that Bob does great too. So it's oh, great trade for Portland. Equally great trade for Washington. You know, those are the best when they work out for both sides. Like the Daniel Gafford trade. The Wizards get Keyshawn George and Rashawn Holmes. And Daniel Gafford helps the Mavs almost win the title. So again, you see this happen a lot with trades. I'm not gonna go back on the Alex Saar pick this early. I, you know, give him some time. Again, if I had to take it again, I would take Alex Saar over Reed Sheppard still. So that's gonna complete the mailbag portion of this episode. Again, I had a lot of fun doing this. I appreciate every single person that sent in a question. You know, it's very helpful for me when you guys respond with such great questions and that I can really talk about for a while. So again, I appreciate that. The last thing I did want to talk about, because I got a lot of questions surrounding this, is Tyus Jones and the fact that he just signed with the Suns. If you're unfamiliar, Tyus Jones just signed a 1-year, $3.3 million deal with the Phoenix Suns, which is, in NBA terms, a veteran minimum. So like a pretty much the lowest salary I think Tyus Jones could have gotten paid for the amount of service and time he's had in the league. And it's a bargain for the Suns. I mean, Tyus Jones is a great player. A guy that would probably net 12 to 15 million on the open market if teams weren't so tight in terms of their cap space. But it's a great move for the Suns. The issue that I have from the Wizards' perspective is they could have traded him at the deadline. They should have traded him at the deadline. There was rumors that they were offered multiple second round picks, which I'm sure are true rumors, and they decided not to take it. They wanted a first, they held out, and the other teams called their bluff. They were like, "Well, we're not going to do it." And I think it was a miscalculation. I think it was a overvaluing on the Wizards' part, and I think, you know, it's one of those things where the front office hopefully learns from it. I'm by no means does this make me think the front off make me think lesser of the front office or trust them lesser. Look, front offices will tell you, like, even the best of the best, they've made mistakes. I mean, look at Golden State, like a huge blunder. They passed on LaMelo because they had enough point guards and they took James Wiseman, who was a bust, but their front office was so good that it didn't matter because their roster was good enough to win a title, which they did. So it also helps that you have Steph Curry and Draymond and Klay, Hall of Famers. But one move doesn't dictate how I feel about this front office. I still have full trust in them. But again, it does look bad, and it obviously makes the KP trade look worse. And what I'll say about the KP trade is KP would have walked for free. He was a free agent if he didn't opt into that contract. So the Wizards getting Bagley right now, the package is basically Bagley in 4 seconds. That's way better than nothing. I had a lot of people trying to tell me that it was nothing. Second round picks mean nothing. Marvin Bagley is going to be gone in a couple of years, if not this year. That trade is basically for nothing. No, it's not. Second round picks don't have to like work out all the time, but that doesn't mean that they're useless. I mean, you look at a team like Denver, they've basically traded all of their second round picks to move off salary, to maneuver the cap, to acquire veterans at the deadline. And it's helped them put themselves in a position to not only win a title, but be a contender for a couple more years. So don't tell me that second round picks mean nothing. You got 4 seconds and Bagley for KP when he could have walked. That should be more than 4 seconds and maybe more players if they decided to do what was right and move Tyus like every Wizards fan said they should. But they didn't, and they got to move on. And I think that this is a good learning experience for their own office, who I'm sure would tell you right now they made a miscalculation, they made a blunder, they made a mistake in their value of Tyus Jones, and I'm sure it won't happen again. So that's my thought, though. I think I'll have another opportunity, a similar chance with Brogdon at the deadline. So we'll see if they did learn from it, and we'll see if they do end up capitalizing on Tyus Jones's value. So that's going to do it for this episode, this mailbag episode of the Wizards podcast. I appreciate all you guys who sent in questions. It was awesome to interact with you and be able to answer some of these. Hopefully I answered them in a way that made sense and in a way that you appreciated. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. Hope you guys enjoyed, and that's about it. Go Wiz.